You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Lampard comes out to Essien.
Oh my goodness.
It's a counter attack. It's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes.
Stretch it. Mix it on many of you. Stretch it.
Chelsea 2. Arsenal 0. And Didier Drogba has.
Drogba in the centre.
McCoy just came to the back. And he's going back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Chelsea Hour. You're joined by me, your host, Dave Babs, and I'm joined by what seems to be, you know, my right-hand man, you know, these days in the Chelsea Hour podcast, Jerry. Jerry, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Babs. How are you?
You know what, I'm tired, bro. I'm tired. You know, for once, it's not Chelsea, but, you know, as they say, life must go on, the show must go on. So, you know, we've got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, indeed.
And speaking about what the people want, players come back from injuries. We've seen, again, news of players being injured. Romeo Lavia has been confirmed to be out for the season. I know a lot of people have been quite outspoken about it because, you know, initially it wasn't supposed to be, you know, this massive upset. It actually also came out in December, allegedly. He was actually rushed back a bit too quickly by the technical staff. He didn't listen to the medical staff around advice. So he was, I mean, that's what caused him to be injured soon again after the match. I just want to get your thoughts, Jerry, around the injuries. Where do you stand? Do you think there's something more at play, or do you think it's just bad luck?
I feel like it's a combination of factors, right? We've seen the incidence of injuries go up across Europe. Probably a knock-on effect of so much football last season and then the tight schedule this season to accommodate the World Cup. So we can see there's a rise in the injuries, but it also seems within Chelsea it's a consistent pattern or trend of people coming back from injury and then never really shaking the issue. Thinking back to sort of the past 10 years, there was always that one player who's injury prone, one or two who would usually have issues. But you know, the pace of game was a lot, has developed and come on a lot since then. But Yeah, but at that time it was only one or two. I can't remember any other time in my memory anyway that you've had 9-10 injuries on a consistent basis. It's kind of crazy. So there must be something there. I mean, there's no smoke without fire. But far be it for me, who's not a medical expert, to get into the technical details of why that's happening. But yeah, I think it's an area that the club has to look at if we want to get the best use of our assets. And there's obviously the accusation has been thrown at Poch that, you know, his training methods are you know, pushing these players over the line. But in a way, this blame game of the technical staff blaming the medical staff blaming the technical staff, that doesn't fill me with confidence. Looking at the internal synergy of the different operations, they should be running a bit more smoothly than that. So it's definitely something the club as a whole needs to look at. I know we've replaced our medical staff recently, but it doesn't seem to have done the trick. But what's your thoughts on it, Babs?
You know what? I'm a bit 50-50. You know, half of me does think it may be down to the training methods, because, you know, we also saw those reports about, you know, the Spurs players following Poch's initial joining the club. A lot of the players were struggling with these methods. I saw one report. I think it was quoted by Adewale, where he said it felt as if they were playing two games a week, whereby they play the game and they'd have 11v11 training again on Wednesday. You know, and if those are similar methods to what he's taking up here at Chelsea, it's definitely going to be tough. But I guess the next argument then would be, you know, these players ideally would be playing two games a week, you know, if we are to get to Europe. So you'd hope they'd eventually be able to be able to match that intensity. But then again, you would hope that, you know, there would be almost a progressive overload in terms of that actual physical intensity, you know, getting used to being able to do those hard yards that Poch loves to do. Because we do know that's a big part of his game, you know, the pressing, the running, you know, outworking your opponents. And it's definitely worked for us this season in some games, you know, most notably probably with the Man City games and Arsenal game earlier in the season. Even against Newcastle to an extent, you can see it definitely worked in terms of outworking our opponent. But I guess that there definitely is a discussion for there to be a middle ground. It was actually also reported that Chelsea are investigating the consistent injury problems that have been somewhat derailed the season for next term. So we'd have to hope that by next season and the preseason in particular, we want to see more normality, you know, in terms of the injuries. Because if you look in terms of the players this season, for instance, who have been derailed by injuries and a bit unavailable, you've got Romeo Lavia, Wesley Fofana, Leslie Ugochukwu, Kani Chukwuemeka, Badiashile and Kunku. That's circa 250 million in transfer spend. That's a quarter of our spend who haven't been able to play this season at all. And that is even taking consideration the likes of like Cucurella. You had a couple of injury problems here and there, and Noni, you had a couple of injuries here and there. So you would want to see the club take some responsibility. And it then raises the question, right? What is the club's role in this, you know, in terms of signing players with injury histories? So, for instance, the Nkunku signing, you know, we signed him mid-season and he obviously had that that injury issue at Leipzig. We also saw Wesley Fofana. He had repeated knee injuries. I think he had quite a few knee injuries at Leicester, for instance, and they've obviously flared back up again. Yeah. He had that extensive medical in America whereby they gave him the all clear. So I just want to get your thoughts, Jerry, on where you think the club's responsibility lies. Do you think it's bad luck or do you think it's just poor due diligence?
I think it's a mixture of both. So I think they've done the appropriate due diligence, but not for an appropriate time. I think right now we're in a stage where, you know, we're trying to build from the ground up. So you're signing younger players who haven't fully developed into the final product yet. And these guys, you know, they need a lot of momentum. So when you have injuries like this, it can make it difficult for them to break into the first team and keep that spot. I also think unfortunately, you're signing players who are injury prone. If the math says the amount of injuries are going up, then your players are also more likely to get injured. So I don't know whether that means we need a change of strategy to look at players, you know, that don't have injury problems. What's that they say? Availability is the best ability. But then also you look at the medical team who went out to do that extended medical. Obviously, there's thorough medicals on each of the players that come in. But as a board member or director of football, if the medical team gives you the all clear, I think it's going to be difficult to doubt what they say. So I do think the club needs to start looking at, maybe if you're going to sign a player like that, then you have a plan for their, you know, their recovery. You look at how to, you know, manage that injury in the minutes they play throughout the season. But it doesn't seem like anything like that has been put in place. You have reports of people being rushed back from injury. We don't know the ins and outs of that, but that doesn't speak to me that there's a plan in place for these sorts of situations. It is about risk at the end of the day. If you're gonna sign a player, you're weighing up the talent the player has, and probably you're getting him at a better price because other people may be reluctant to pay the money. But then the risk is, how are you gonna ensure he plays 40, 50 games a season, and is there to pay you back for that investment you've made in him? You have to mitigate that risk to make that successful. And I think that all the different departments of the club are still kind of working themselves out. So that level of synergy between departments and organization, I just don't think we've reached that yet.
And that's very well said. Very, very well said. So I know there's obviously been a lot of discussion, you know, regarding the signings, you know, a lot of people labeling players as flops. So why do you think fans are so quick to label injured players as flops? And where do you lie within that? Because I guess there's also, as we said, there's a duty of care that the club has in terms of signing these players and having them in pre-designed programs, which allow them to, you know, minimize and mitigate these injuries. But where do you lie in that in terms of fans labeling these injured players flops so frequently?
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of the frustration from our own fans, and then, you know, classic point scoring from opposition fans. From our own fans, I can speak to obviously feeling that frustration when a player you feel has the characteristics to you know, fill a gap or really help the team is missing, and it's something else to look at, something else to blame when things go wrong. I think this is just that frustration that's coming through. There is also, you know, the unfortunate fact that a lot of players, when they come back from injury, and they need some of them need more time to get back into a good flow, match fitness. There are also those with serious injuries that come back, and it could take even more than a season to get back to their best. You think of the example of Van Dijk, we all thought he was cooked after that injury, but he's looking a bit more like himself now. So, yeah, those players are going to struggle when they come back. And if opposition fans are looking, or your own fans are looking, and they think, okay, this is the outlay for this player, I've been waiting for him to come back for so long. Let me see the impact he has. And it's a small sample size, and if he doesn't impress, then, you know, I feel like fans are quick to turn on the player. There are lessons in our history going back to, you know, someone like Arjen Robben, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, as a particular example. There was a long period of time where we didn't think he would be able to, you know, sustain a run in the first team. I remember he had, was it back injuries? I think it was his lower back. He had issues with his lower back. And I think there were other niggling injuries that came with that. And I remember thinking, like, this guy is a really good player, but how is he gonna fight for his place at Chelsea if he can't get over these injuries? And look at him now, he's availability is a lot better, and thus his impact on the team is obviously going to be greater. So yeah, I think we need to have these fans, we need to learn from these lessons as fans, and yeah, give these players a bit more patience, a bit more time. Yeah, you can't label someone as a flop until you've done your due diligence.
That's very well said, and I'm going to quickly just introduce Meads to the pod here. Meads, how you doing?
Can't complain. Sorry, gents. Work had me doing all sorts of madness, but I'm here. I had to jump on. It's been a while since I've been on the pod, so thank you for having me.
Absolutely no worries. Actually, no worries. And to get right into it, you know, we were just discussing the injuries, you know, reports about players being rushed back early. It's also just come out recently now that Chelsea are having another investigation into the injuries. And so where do you stand, Meads, in regards to this? So where are your current feelings? I don't think we've ever seen anything like this, this extent of injuries in terms of volume and...
So there's going to be an investigation in regards to our injury crisis?
Precisely, yes.
I mean, it's been a long time coming, to be honest. I think ever since the owners got rid of our, you know, experienced physios and medical department, it just seems like everything's kind of fallen apart. The amount of players that I feel, and I'm no medical professional, but the amount of players that I feel have been back and have been pretty quickly re-injured has been very concerning. And honestly, I feel like this investigation needs to happen because, yeah, I feel like Chelsea are falling apart. All of our players, whether it's experienced, whether it's young, whether it's fringe players, whether it's a regular, consistent players that we play, it just seems a mess right now. And Chelsea needs to get a grip with it. I don't know if it's to do with Pochettino himself or if it's to do with our medical department in general. It's very difficult to really isolate what the real issue is. We've been getting injuries for quite some time, so I don't want to put it all on Poch, but I've never seen anything like this where we're getting injuries at this frequency the same way, and we're getting re-injury as well. It's not even just new injuries. We're getting re-injuries, and a lot of them are muscular injuries as well, which is, yeah, very concerning. And I've never seen anything like it, essentially.
And that's very well said. Very, very well said. And my other question to you then, Meads, is where do you think the club's role is in this in terms of their duty of care? Because we obviously signed players such as Fofana, who've had quite extensive injury history in terms of his knees. I know you obviously in the group chat, you mentioned the fact that Lavia obviously had problems last season at Southampton with a hamstring injury, which I think that was another injury that actually flared up again this season. You also got somebody like an Nkunku, you know, who was signed mid-season before he was injured. So where do you think the club's role is in regards to that?
I mean, here's my thing. In terms of, like, injury-prone players, you know my stance, really. I don't feel like it's a problem buying them. Unless, like, if you feel like, okay, they can add something to the squad, add something to the team, no problem. As long as you don't build around them, and build your squad with the idea of, okay, when Nkunku's back or when Labia's back, we're going to be XYZ. I think you need to start building a squad with players that you can rely upon, players that are going to be available, players that are going to play pretty much every other week. Because, yeah, planning for injury-prone players, and I think it might be safe to say that Nkunku is an injury-prone player, given the extent of his injuries over the last couple of years. It's not sensible. So I can't really put the blame on the club because ultimately the squad building process kind of comes from the scouts and comes from the manager. Now, Pochettino has gone on record quite a few times this season saying that, oh, when Nkunku's back, we're going to be a different team, or I planned for Nkunku, but he's injured. That kind of shows to me that that's poor planning on the part of the manager, really. Because really and truly, you see and you know that his medical history isn't quite good. So he's not really a player they can really build around. So the idea of, yeah, I'm building my squad around these injury-prone players is poor. Now, you could argue that, well, why are the club buying injury-prone players? But sometimes you don't know. Like, Lavia had an injury at Southampton last season, but I don't know if I could attribute him being an injury-prone player. I think he's just had issue injury over the last couple of months. It's definitely not ideal, and it's probably one of the worst starts that he could ever imagined. But ultimately, these things happen in football. It's very frustrating, though, I can't lie. And again, it's very difficult for me to really point the blame at anyone, really and truthfully. I mean, it might be a coincidence that they sacked all of the medical staff, and since then, we've had a massive uptick in injuries. It may be a coincidence that these new owners have brought in non-professional football-related physiotherapists and doctors. Fine, it might be that, but I don't really know the ins and outs to really point fingers, if that makes sense. So it's just a mess, really. It smells of incompetence. And I said that on the account, it smells of incompetence, but I can't really locate where the smell actually is, if that makes sense. All I know, it stinks, and something needs to change massively.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Something needs to change massively indeed. Speaking of change, so news of Chelsea appointing a new chairman in 2027 to replace Todd Boehly's obviously come out. For most of us, we were aware of this, you know, in terms of the custodian role, that every 5 years, I think it's every 5 or 7 years, they have an option to rotate the chairmanship. I just want to get your thoughts on these on that real quick, in terms of that news coming out at this time.
That's very interesting, considering I feel like Todd's kind of taken a step back over the last year, I'd say, which I find, I mean, I don't know. I think it's very difficult to really gauge the impact of this because, you know, Todd has been pretty hands-on. He was hands-on in the first season, and I kind of begged for him to step back, which he obliged. But Ibardi seems to have been getting a bit more of a more hands-on role this time around, and it seems to have created even more of a mess. Now, I can't really celebrate or complain about what's going on in terms of him being replaced or not, because I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, because ultimately you don't really know who's really running the show at the moment, because it's all, you know, bells and whistles. You don't really know. Like, no one says, like, who exactly it is. Everyone's, you know, got the insider saying that it's Igbali, and then others saying it's Todd. So it's just the structure in itself is just a bit of a mess and chaotic. And if, for example, this chairman does come in and he is the one that is in charge of pretty much all things that is Chelsea, then I guess it will give some clarity and I guess some direction as to, you know, what's going on. Because as it stands, it just feels very messy. Obviously, that's in 2 more years or well, 3 more years. So we can't really be celebrating it or, you know, denouncing it either way too much. But yeah, it's... it's just one of those ones where I'm just like, well, we just have to wait and see. To put it simply, just have to wait and see. Because it's just, it is what it is, man. We're just, it's like, it's so depressing at times talking about us, because I feel like we've got a good squad. I think we've got a good group of players, but it just seems like everything else around that is just a mess. And I just don't get it, to be honest.
That's very well said. And speaking about confusion, I know a lot of Chelsea fans were left confused early this season when Ian Matson wasn't given a chance at left back. Reports coming out that he's attracting interest from various teams such as Bayern Munich. I want to get your thoughts, Jerry, real quick, around Matson and obviously the fact that he wasn't given an opportunity at left back to play here. I don't think I've ever had your opinion on Matson. Where did you stand on him, and do you think it's bad business, you know, to sell him so soon?
I think our hands are tied now, aren't they? I'm not sure he's going to come back and be looking to fight for his place when he knows, you know, I can go to Dortmund, who probably want me buying and looking at me, can play in a league that maybe suits my strengths a little bit more. And listen, these are pure profit times. So I think he's going to be one of those guys on the list. I think with him as a player, I'm really unsure on how to judge him as a fullback. Well, he did it in the Championship. I'm not someone who thinks, you know, you need someone 6 foot to be able to defend. I think you can make do with intelligent defending, and that's something smaller players generally tend to pick up on their way up through the pyramid. So I think I was looking forward to seeing him. He looks good in pre-season, although he never played left back. And it's kind of hard to judge him with these, you know, cameos he gets, the trust minutes. I think he's a good player, and I think he could have definitely helped us down that left-hand side with his ability on the front foot. But it's really difficult to judge in his limited time on the pitch. Yeah, but that's what I didn't understand about his relationship with Pochettino. I thought if he's been able to show in the Championship, although playing more as a wing back, that he can handle the intensity and physicality of the game. Was there something Poch was seeing differently in training? He never really gave a clear reason to us anyway. But it just seemed like one of those cases where it seemed like the old Chelsea actually. It reminds me of those times where there was no pathway for youth players into the first team, and they would just come and hang around for a while before eventually leaving. I think he'll go this summer.
That's very interesting. I know a lot of people have been worried about his hype as a potential issue. You know, you look at Chelsea, a team that obviously struggled from set pieces. And that may be a potential reason why he's not been able to be trusted at left back. So where do you stand on this, and what are your thoughts? I know you're quite a big fan of the player.
I think Matson's a good player. I think he most definitely could have helped us throughout the season. And it kind of feels like beating a dead horse at the moment. When he left, it wasn't a shock, because Stephanie wasn't playing him. He definitely is him as a left back. We know that from pre-season. And it's just a shame, really, because I think the talent's there. It's odd, because one of the best left-backs you'll probably ever see in the history of football wasn't tall. That's Ashley Cole. Ashley Cole's not tall by any stretch. And I'm not saying Ian Matson is Ashley Cole's height, but even in terms of aerial duels, Ashley Cole wasn't the greatest in the air. But the best thing about Ashley Cole was his anticipation to sniff out danger. I'm not saying for one second that Ian Matson is of that level, but you give the player an opportunity to play and show you that he can actually do the job. And he was never given that opportunity. The only time he was thrown on the pitch was when we were chasing the result, where he's thrown on with Mudryk to try and salvage something from the game. Now, I think in terms of squad building, again, the responsibility falls on the manager to really utilise the squad accordingly and get them and put them in their best position to thrive. Ian Matson's never been a forward. I mean, he's good in terms of backing up play, good technical ability, but he's not a forward. He's all been a fullback. So, yeah, the decision to be playing him at right wing is beyond crazy. But it's not something that we haven't seen from Pochettino this season in terms of using players in their wrong position. So, yeah, it's just a shame. Obviously, I like Maatsen, and we probably will command a decent fee for him. But I never would have wanted him to go. I think he would have been a capable, at the very least, capable squad player for the club, and maybe even kick on and push on to be our first choice left back. Because you know how I feel about Ben Chilwell and Cucurella. Good player. I think he's a good player, but I think in terms of the offensive side of the game, he may lack a little bit in comparison to an Ian Maatsen, for example. So, yeah, I think I would have preferred to have Ian Maatsen and Cucurella as our two fullbacks. But, yeah, it is what it is now, man. It's just a mess.
Yeah, it does seem to be a mess. And speaking of messes, we've also been linked by Fabrizio Romano that we are looking at centre-back. I mean, it's definitely been a link that hasn't died. It was very, very large at the beginning of the season, obviously, when we had those injuries and brought to Sassi. Many probably thought that would have been the last of centre-backs, but it does seem as though Chelsea are looking at another centre-back. I know Usman Diomande has been one of the names mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get your thoughts, Jerry, on this in terms of do you think is a pressing need in a team? And if it is, what kind of profile do you think we should be looking at? Because obviously with Gosilva, being our senior centre-back, looking like he's going to be out for the season, would he be responsible to get another young centre-back coming to the team?
Wait, 1 second. Sorry. He's out for the season.
Pardon, sorry?
Thiago Silva's out for the season.
Oh, no. I think he's looking like he's going to be going at the end of the season, God. Thiago Silva.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah. Currently, we have Wesley Fofana, who we haven't been able to rely on at the minute. And he was meant to be probably the Thiago Silva replacement. We've got Axel Disasi and Levi Colwill, who seem to be, in this late season run, sort of a partnership that we've played. Trevor Chalobah, he's come in as well, being out most of the season. Badia Shill started really well with Chelsea, but his form has been, a little up and down the last 3-4 months. You've got Colwill, who spent most of the season at left back, and no one really, we don't have a big sample size for him at centre back at Chelsea. And then you've got Disasi, who has his strengths but also has his weaknesses. So it is an uncertain picture at centre back, and I can understand why they're looking for one. But I don't think I'd call that as a priority. I think we need to trim the squad. We need to go into next season with a lot more balanced squad. I think definitely in the attacking areas, we need to decide what we're doing with a few bodies. But in terms of additions, I don't think we need too many. So if they have the budget for a centre-back, then I can see why they'd want to bring that in. But again, centre-back is an area that you have to really look at who you want to keep. It looks like Chalobah and Silva will be leaving. And if that's the case, then I can see someone coming in. But from all the reports, it seems like we don't have as much space to be spending like we've done in the past few windows. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
I mean, I feel like, and I said this before, sometimes I feel we may just need a transfer ban. And it sounds crazy, but I feel like we do. Because we have all of these players. And yes, like I said before, players like Wesley Fofana, I mean, let's say the ghost of Wesley Fofana, because we haven't seen this guy for over a year. And unfortunately, he's not a player you can really rely upon because he's injury issues that you've had. So again, once we talk about building a squad, you kind of have to plan without Wesley. But I just feel like we've got enough there We've got Humphreys on loan again. I'm not saying Humphreys is this world beater, but he's a player that is capable of you bringing into the squad. And okay, yes, he could do a job. Like, I don't see why you need to spend 30, 40, 50, 60 million pounds on a centre back when you've got other areas of the squad that need addressing, like the attack. I just don't get it. Like, I feel like it just wouldn't make any sense. It wouldn't make any sense. And I unfortunately for me, it would be more in line with just more the chaos that we've seen in terms of, yeah, in terms of the club operations, buying players, selling players. It would just be a bit more messy. But that's just Chelsea at the minute. Like, I'm struggling to really find the positives in terms of, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think players like Diamande, good defender, but is he really a must? I feel like Chelsea should be, especially with the limited budget that apparently we have, given FFP constraints, and I think Chelsea should be looking at strengthening certain areas like the striking area. I think that should be the priority, the absolute priority, because, yeah, I think Broglie is probably leaving. We've only got Jackson as the nine. Washington's not been given an opportunity to show what he can do, rightly or wrongly. So, yeah, we need to be utilising our resources elsewhere rather than spending big again on defenders, because I feel like that's all we've been doing in recent times, and I don't think we're better off for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Poch, what is his first choice centre-back pairing? Because there have been quite a few. I think he likes De Sassi in there. So, assuming Poch is, you know, having an influence on these meetings, and, you know, deciding what positions are needed, why would he want another centre back in? He's got, he's got Colwell, who, you know, he pulled into the team this season. He's got Badiashile, who sometimes doesn't even get game time, partly because of injuries, partly because obviously Cobble. You've got Chalabar also in the team. You've got Fofana coming back next season. It does seem that if someone comes in, we are going to have to cut down on the bodies. A few players are going to have to leave. Our team could look quite different again next season. And also left back, I would have thought left back was a bigger priority. There have been reports that they're looking at left back as a weak area. Chelsea next season is going to be very, very interesting. You'll see how Poch does as well. Got a few games left of the season. We'll see if he's still here next season.
Yeah, boy, I don't know, man. That's the thing. You never really know. That's the craziest thing. You don't know with us, man. We're so mad. Like, we're such a weird team. Like, a weird club at the moment. It's... Ugh. Yikes.
Yeah. What's your current issue, or what's your current thoughts around Chelsea in general? I don't think we got there at the start.
Well, that's like I said a moment ago. I feel like we've got good players. I'm happy with the squad by and large. I don't really, really want us to be going out and spending any more money, to be perfectly honest. But if you were to ask me areas where I feel we can improve, then it would probably be up top in terms of our striking options. And where else? Yeah, probably up top, striking options, and left back. But again, left back is a self-inflicted wound. We don't need to buy a left back, but now we've put ourselves in a position where we have to buy a left back, because Ben Chilwell is definitely not the answer, not good enough. And now we've gotten rid of Ian Matson, who's got on a loan with option to buy. He's probably going to leave. So it's just like, well, you've kind of put yourself in a corner there. So yeah, you're going to have to spend some resources left back. Fine. Up top, we've been linked with Gokeres, fantastic player, and also linked with Osimhen. Again, a very good player. So these players, you're spending, you're at risk to spend big money on both, or one of them, sorry. So it's just like, what are we doing, basically? Again, it just goes back to the point of what exactly are we doing? And I just feel like it's just chaos all over the place. And I think we need to just settle down. We don't need to have too many even parts, because ultimately, I just don't think we're better for it, like, at all. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's my thoughts, basically, on us at the minute.
I think that's very, very fair. Very, very fair. And speaking of spending big money and speaking of strikers, Chelsea have been reported to be scouting Gyökeres. I want to get your thoughts, especially on this meeting. I know you seem to be a fan of the player. So I was to get you just around, you know, the profile of the player. What do you think he can add to the team that we currently lack, and if you think it could be a good signing potentially?
Yeah, I think the signing, I'd like the signing, because I think he's a good player. I think he would add a lot to the group. I think he'd add a lot in terms of his goal scoring prowess and quality. But it's a funny one, because I think he'd be good. And I do think we need a striker, but I don't know. It's a weird one. I don't know, because I want him, because I think he's fantastic, and I think he's relatively mobile. He's strong. He's physical. He can shoot off either feet. He creates good separation. He shoots from anywhere. That's another thing that I like about him. And same with Osimhen as well. They both could shoot from anywhere. And they're like risky strikers. They like to put themselves about on the pitch. They're always active. And despite the fact that Gyökeres isn't he's the fastest, and I'd probably say I liken his speed kind of similar to a Harry Kane, for example, but he's always active, always on the move, always sniffing out chances. Good in the air, good physical profile. And he's like hungry as well. I think he's one of those players that play with a point to prove, considering, you know, his journey in football. I think it provides a degree of humility and just hunger. And I like those kind of strikers. So I think the profile works. The quality is there for sure. He's at a good age as well in his career. But I also, part of me thinks, well, and I've said this in a group chat, I like Nicholas Jackson, and I don't know if this destabilizes him. But at the end of the day, I have to think about what's best for Chelsea. And I think signing the Gyökeres will probably be best for Chelsea. Now, in terms of Jackson, I kind of want to evaluate him at the end of, the end of the season, and just see where he's at in terms of what I see from now to the end of the season in terms of his performances and quality in play. Because I think his overall game is good. But in terms of his finishing and his ball striking, I still need to see a massive improvement in that respect. But by and large, I think he's done a okay job in his first season in England. But I kind of want to see a bit more to really gauge and decide on, okay, do I really want us to get a new striker or not? I do, but I'm also on the fence, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, Gyökeres, I think, would be a really good signing. I think if he comes with his manager as well, that will also be a plus. But yeah, I don't know if we're staying with Poch or not. It's just very much up in the air with all that. And yeah, it's hard for me to, you know, to get excited about Gyökeres when, you know, the man at the helm will still be there. So yeah, that's where I stand, really.
You know, I think that's very, very fair for sure. I think that's very, very fair, especially around the managerial point and the fact that obviously Nicholas Jackson, he seems to be a player that's constantly improving throughout the season. He's a player with a lot of technical ability. You know, he's shown that he definitely has ability up top in his first season really as a striker. So, Jerry, I want to get your thoughts around him, Jackson, and what you think signing another striker could mean for him and his Chelsea career.
Well, let me call back to what Giroud said about the difference between Chelsea and Arsenal. You know, Arsenal, If you don't do the job one season, you get the next Chelsea. If you don't do the job, they get another striker in the next summer to compete for your place. So I think he's definitely come a long way this season. I think we are very aware of his talents, the strengths that he does have. Ultimately, though, as a striker, you're going to get judged more severely on your goals. So there are points in the season where, you know, the chances missed, or, you know, some of the situations that we've wasted have reflected badly on him. I don't know if going into the season with him as the main striker next season, I don't know if we're going to take that gamble. I'm conflicted because I feel like on one hand, we're not going to be fighting for the Premier League. We don't need, you know, a top elite striker. You don't need strikers. So you not all teams necessarily need a striker that's going to score 30 goals. I think you can improvise and make a way around it. There's, you know, more than one way to skin a cat. So if we can find a structure that leads to him being able to not worry about getting goals so much and run down, you know, the channel, occupy defenses, and you still chip in with goals, then I think he can play that role really well. But if we're going into season with expecting him to, you know, carry us on his back and get 30 goals, and I think that expectation, you know, set him up to fail. So yeah, for me, it depends a lot on obviously the coach, who that's going to be, and what their plan is, and also the other attackers around him. You know, what his role is going to be in the team. I think if you think about what Watkins has been doing previously to the season, he and Jackson are quite similar in a lot of ways. And if you look at obviously Watson's jump up in goals this season, you know, that finishing is the one thing that stands out. I feel like Jackson and Watkins are actually kind of similar in the fact that Jackson scores a lot of chances that you think he has no right to, and sometimes will miss the ones that you think he can't miss.
Mm.
So getting his finishing a lot more consistent, then he can really make that place his own. But I think, you know, with what we're fighting for next season, I think he's good enough. I think he's just about good enough. It's just about seeing how that development carries on.
But that's the question, though. What are we fighting for next season? That's one thing that I don't actually know. But I don't know where. I mean, look, if we get a good manager, then for me, there's a bit. I think I'd have more of an expectation for the season. If we have Pochettino, I don't really expect much different than what we've got this season, if that makes any sense. So it's just one of those ones where it already depends on the manager, and already depends, yeah, on the manager. I think you rightfully put it, Jackson. I think having the goal burden just beat on Jackson is a bad move. I think generally you want to be able to share your goals around the team anyway, but I think Jackson, for me, has shown that he's not really that high-scoring, clinical finish that you're going to get, that get the 25s, 30 goals a season. I don't really see that yet. He may develop into that, but I just don't see that yet. I think it's been mentioned a couple times in the pod that Jackson, as a left winger, potentially could be a very useful option. He could be a very useful option as a winger. And I think that may be it, really. I think that might be a solution where you get a good a striker to share the load with Jackson. And I think that might even be a better utilization of your team. So having two goal scorers on the pitch, or two potential goal scorers on the pitch, might make a whole world of difference in terms of how you set up and how you can attack teams. So I think that might actually be a good solution. So getting another striker might actually be the best option for Jackson, because it takes the weight off him, and he's also able to play left wing, where he's very comfortable. So, yeah.
That's very well put. Very, very well put. Obviously, I think amongst the pod group, you know, Chelsea, we've definitely been quite big on having multiple avenues of goal scorers, you know, rather than just looking at one guy to be the sole goal scorer around the team. So maybe potentially having somebody like a Gyökeres who's that batting ram could allow for Jackson to also be able to play off him, because we've also seen, you know, he has quite good link-up ability. So maybe having him play off a striker could be a positive for us going into the next season. And speaking of positives, you also got to look at negatives. You know, fans or foes, you know, there's been a lot of arguments between some of the Chelsea groups and negativity around the club. The Chelsea Supporters Trust sent out 1,500 word letters to Bed Adebali and Todd Boehly with an urgent requirement to engage with a wider fan base on a set of issues. A lot of them believe that there were broken pledges on prices, a failure of existing supporter mechanisms, and the feeling that Chelsea become a laughing stock. And we obviously had the Chelsea fan, the Brazil Broad, who actually went against the Chelsea Supporters Trust by saying that they don't recognise suggestions that fans aren't being involved in the future club. Urge for fans to pull together, because the only people that benefit from Chelsea fans telling on each other are other clubs. So two quite strong opinions there from both from supporters clubs. I know some people believe the FAB, the Fan Advisory Board, to be almost a ploy set by the board as a voice, as almost like a buffer between the board and fans. I want to get your guys' thoughts around the negativity around the club, and not just us as fans and role in this, but how we can also improve the situation. I want to go to you, Mies, first on this.
It's tough because, for one, I agree that there's definitely a toxicity around Chelsea that's been brewing for quite some time. I think, if I'm honest, I feel like Todd Boehly did a decent job in terms of getting rid of the divisive players that, not through their fault, but getting rid of players that kind of divided the fan base. So like a Mason Mount, Jorginho, those are players that kind of divided the fan base. I don't think it's any of their faults. I just think they had like cult-like followings, and people, I guess, just went a bit too far in terms of the way that they criticised and harangued certain players. But then that also kind of falls into the idea of, look, there's actions within the club in terms of supporters. I think that we have too much fractions. In fact, I think you've got people that just love off the academy and they abuse and get onto the foreign players. And then you've got some others that are just like, okay, well, F the academy. And it's just like, there's so many different factions in our club. It's like, I fully understand why they feel like there's a toxicity. I fully understand why they feel like there's a negativity around the place. And like they rightfully said, all this negativity, all it does is hamper Chelsea. It doesn't help us. It makes us even weaker. And the players feel it. The players will feel the negativity around the stadium. The players will feel, okay, that the environment at the bridge is not good. And yeah, it doesn't help anyone. It really doesn't help anyone other than our rivals. And, you know, obviously things are so bad, it doesn't really matter whether it's helping rivals or not, but it doesn't help us at all. It doesn't help the fans build a synergy with the players. It doesn't help the players build a synergy with the fans. And like I said, we're in so much of a mess, it's very difficult to kind of see where and how you point the fingers at anyone. That's so difficult. I definitely feel like our fans, we need to do better. We need to start being a bit more supportive towards our team, because that's the only way to really galvanize the players. But it's just very, very difficult when things on the pitch are so bad. You know what I mean? Like, if things were better on the pitch, I think you get a little less noise. But things are so bad on the pitch, I think everyone's focus kind of turns, you know, to anger and frustration. You get that's unfortunately what you're seeing with a lot of the backlash with our fans. It's just, yeah, it's a shame. But yeah, the product on the pitch isn't great, and it all kind of falls into one thing, really. It all kind of rolls into the same thing. like, the products on the pitch ain't going to be good, then you're obviously going to get some discontent within the fans. But I definitely think our fans, at times, there's a big toxicity within the fan base, most definitely. You know, as we, I'm one of the admins on the Chessy account, I see it. I see the toxicity. And that's not to say I don't get involved in the toxicity at times. I'm most definitely, I'm a fan. I'm emotional. And we all obviously have our emotions invested in Chelsea. But yeah, I could definitely say that there's a high level of toxicity within the fan base, most definitely.
Very well said, Meat. And I'm speaking about the players. Madueke did hit out the fans recently regarding Chelsea fans booing Raheem Sterling, you know, showing him support about him and how he's actually supported a lot of the young players around the club, both on the pitch and off the pitch. So, as you say, you know, the players hear it. If we can hear it, the players can obviously hear it and the players can see it. So, it's definitely something that Chelsea fans need to do a lot better with. I know a lot of Chelsea fans are in that aggressive camp of, you know, they want to be really harsh to the board. And I get it, you know, the board, they've been far from perfect. They've far from done a great job. But at the end of the day, you've got to support your team. You've got to support the players. And if you want to have success, there has to be almost a sense of community, you know, to drive a club forward. You know, I hate to use them as an example, but we've seen them, the North London lot, you know, they seem to have been moving in one direction over the last 18 months or so. And it's definitely playing an effect, you know, with players, you know, speaking positively about the fans, you know, players actually feeding off the fans' energies almost to a negative extent, you know, in terms of that North London Forever song. So there definitely is a role that Chelsea fans need to play, you know, in supporting the team, not just in the good, but also in the bad. I think fans at times have definitely tried to be patient, but I think that there's a lot more that can definitely be done.
You know what? I fully hear you. I feel like the fans, to be fair, this season have been super patient, if I'm honest.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry to interrupt you, bro, but even when you think about the fact that Pochettino's an ex-Tottenham manager, I feel like they actually gave him a fair share.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be real. Like, the fans have been super patient. Like, I have no problem calling out the fans. I have no problem saying, look, this is a mess. Nope. But the fans have been patient. I'm going to be real with Pochettino. I think where the fans need to do better is point their discontent, not at the players. Because I always say this, the players pretty much are doing their absolute best. And I think if you look at the individual quality, some of the individual moments throughout the season, you're like, well, you can look at it and think, you know what? Actually, you know what? Fair play. You lot are doing your thing. But if you look at the game management, if you look at how we've kind of gone about games and approaches to games, you're like, okay, well, you start looking at the manager more than anything. And I feel like the players have been getting the brunt of the frustration from the Chelsea fans. And I don't think they really deserve it. I think it's fair enough if you're not happy with Pochettino and what he's been dishing up. But players, I mean, yeah, you're going to get some bad performances, but by and large, I think the players have done all right. You know what I mean? Like, the players, have done okay. But, yeah, it's like you said, Babs, there needs to be a synergy. There definitely needs to be a synergy. There definitely needs to be a culture of, you know, togetherness. And at present, it's just not there at Chelsea. I think anytime we've been successful, you'll see that the players, the fans, are all in alignment. And as well as the board, of course, we're all in alignment. But I just feel like that is lacking severely at Chelsea at the moment. And yeah, you could tell it's telling, basically.
Very well said. And I'm going to get your thoughts as well, Jerry, around the toxicity surrounding the fan base and where you lie regarding these statements from the two support trusts.
Yeah, that's not good. It's not good. I think it's always interesting to see these, you know, different groups with different motives. Obviously, they're both slated to support Chelsea and, you know, represent the fans. But I think this is a good way of showing that, you know, although they're the fan base is, you know, we all support the same team. We are not all the same. You know, without, you know, the so the toxicity, I think an open forum for two fan groups is a good thing. I think it's a good thing to represent, you know, in the best way, all the voices of the different voices of the fans. Yeah, but the toxicity and, you know, negative feeling around the fan base at the minute, there are always people who are going to whip that up, and there are, you know, the people with the loudest voices. But I definitely feel like a tide has started to turn. To be honest, the only person I know that still backs Poch is Jermaine. even all the people who, you know, say give him time and, you know, back the manager, it's really starting to turn. And I think that's a difficult environment to get out of as a manager. It's also a difficult environment to break as a club, because going forward into the next manager, the battle lines will be drawn and we'll be stuck in this cycle. So it's why I kind of wish Poch did a little bit more to, I won't say appease the fans, but, you know, any job, you have stakeholders that you have to manage. And I don't think he's done the best job of managing us as fans.
Agreed.
And I think as a coach, as a team, there's things you can do. So if, you know, Liverpool fans are all united behind Klopp, and it's not because, or it's not just because they've won so much, but it's because of the culture he's created.
Yeah.
Around the club, how that extends to his interactions to the fans. That's one way of doing it. You know, there's managers like Pep who he wins over the fans with the results and the pitch and his reputation. Yeah. It seems like Poch is just, you know, he's kind of fed up of the criticism from the fans and he's just saying, let me work. But
you have to earn the right to do that, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You have to earn, and I think coming in as a former Tottenham guy, I think he always knew it'd be difficult, but it's just I don't think he's done enough. I think he's fighting against the fans rather than, you know, trying to get us on side, and yeah, that's never going to end well.
Yeah, agreed. I get a very similar feeling. I think it's all good being combative. It's all good, you know, fighting your corner, but broski, you've been given a very long rope, you know.
He talks about the fans a lot.
Yeah, you've been given a long rope, you know. Like, they didn't get onto you until, like, December. Like, you've not even been getting... Like, in fact, it weren't even until the new year. It weren't even until the new year that they were getting onto you, bro. So, I don't know what he expected. Like, the fact that you keep saying, oh, it's a new Chelsea. Yes, brother, largely because of you. Like, because your expectations and the way you're trying to drive expectation down, that's not Chelsea. You know what I mean? And like you said, he's battling with the fans, which is the complete opposite of what he should be doing. He should be trying to not only appease, but trying to get us on side. And trying to make himself palatable, because it's a difficult pill to swallow that ex-Tottenham manager is here managing the club. You know what I mean? So it's just, I think, yeah, like you said, Jerry, he's not done a good enough job in so many different aspects of the role. I think tactically, he's not done a good job. I think in terms of relationship with the fans, most definitely hasn't done a good job. I mean, relationship with players seems to be decent, so at least in that respect it looks okay, but everything else just seems just to be poor, and that level of mediocrity isn't welcome for me at the club. It's just not, it's not good enough.
Very, very well put together. And obviously, you know, we've just come out of the international break. Two performers definitely stood out to a lot of Chelsea fans. Well, Noni Madueke, who ended the break with two goals and two assists for the under-21s. And then Mikhailo Mudryk, who had the goal, the winning goal to send Ukraine to the Euros. There's been a lot of discussion around performances and influence around the club starts, with Mudryk seemingly banging down the door for weeks and weeks on end now. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts around the two players. Do you believe that their cameos and performances, international break, have warranted starts with them going into the game against Burnley? And if so, who do you think should be dropped in place for them? I'm going to start with you, Jerry, on this one.
I think they've both. One thing that surprised me about, you know, Poch, I know there is a benefit to having an established squad and giving them the opportunity, but for me, something I felt over the years that I don't think that Premier League coaches leverage form enough. And whilst I do understand, you know, having your 12, 11 group of players that you trust and that are central to your strategy, but I do think when a player shows that he is in the turn of form, I think you can capitalize on that. I think you can keep him engaged with what the how the progress of the team by, you know, giving him the opportunity. And listen, doesn't matter what level of ability a player has, a player of form is definitely valuable to a team. And I think we've seen Mudryk have good performances, make impact an impact on the team. And we've seen Madueke also over the obviously he was frozen out for a little bit and he came back into the team. And since then, I think he's improved a lot. I think it's already been up from there. And I think while both of the Mudryk and Madueke, both of them have to work on their consistency, their level of impact over the course of 90 minutes. I think at this stage in the season where, you know, we're just trying to finish as high as possible, I think we need to give them the opportunity to stake a claim. I think especially when we've been struggling with the impact of the players they're replacing. I think Sterling is obviously one that has struggled at points this season. He's been, you know, quite inconsistent. I think the problem with Mudryk and Madueke is it's probably only going to be one with Poch, because if it's Mudryk, it's a like-for-like switch, you know, on the left-hand side. But if it's Madueke, he's a right winger, and you know, Cole Palmer has performed so well in that area of the pitch. So if you're moving Cole Palmer in, then, you know, Gallagher, Enzo, Caicedo has to come outside. And I think Poch is generally reluctant to do that. So I think it is going to be one or the other. I think it's more likely to be Mudryk. It'll be interesting to see what Poch does with Sterling, whether he wants, you know, take him out of the firing line or put his faith in him and send him back out there. But I do feel like as a coach, when you have these players showing streaks of form, how many times over the years has the Premier League been decided by someone who wasn't part of the first 11? I can think back, in our case, to Michy Batshuayi scoring that goal against West Brom to win us the title. Yeah, it's definitely something I feel like you can use as a tool as a coach.
Very, yeah. Very fair. And Meads, obviously, we've seen Mikhailo Mudryk have quite a lot of impact centrally, recent number 10. So how do you think he can probably potentially impact us in this current run? And who would you replace him with? Would you rather replace Sterling out wide, or would you want to put him through the middle?
I mean, you guys know I stand with the Mudryk thing. I think it's very disappointing. I feel like the way that Poch has handled this has been really, really poor. Again, this is another one of the failings that I think he's had. I think the Mudryk situation has been so baffling to me because people are saying, oh, yeah, no, mentally frail, mentally fragile, et cetera, et cetera. Shouldn't play him because not good enough. People are even doing mental gymnastics as the reason why it's fine for Ben Chilwell to play as left winger than Mudryk. I think it's all been a bit of a farce, to be perfectly honest. Mudryk, for me, should have been playing months ago. But for whatever reason, that's not been the case. Fine. Raheem Sterling, for me, has been up and down this season. More so down than up. I haven't really been particularly impressed. But he has had some impactful moments and has had some impactful games. So him playing and starting is not really like grinding my gears that much. But I think where you have a situation where Mudryk has been making an impact, and I think pretty much every game that he's been involved in and gotten sufficient minutes in, he's impacted the result or impacted the game with a goal or an assist. I think to ignore that is quite a big oversight from the coach. Because, yeah, again, like, what else do you... What do you lose from utilising Mudryk? Like, what do you lose? I think he's got dynamic, blistering speed that you can utilise in your team. I think he's got inventiveness and he's got an imagination about him, which I think is really, really good for someone who plays at that speed. And I just think, and I've said this before, you don't really know how bad or good Mudryk is because you've never really given him a platform and a consistency to actually show how good he is. And I think he's a good player. I think I've seen enough of him, I've seen enough about him to see, okay, you know what? There is something about you. And there's a quality about you that I think you can really, really take off if you're given the right platform to play. It's just a shame that he's not had that since he's been at Chelsea, like whether that's Graham Potter or now Pochettino. Now, you may argue that, oh, well, he's not deserved it because if he deserved it, he would have been playing. No, that might be the case, but it's not always that easy. When you've got a group of, you know, 25, 26 players all trying to play, even if you cost £60 million, you may just be one of those guys that are just left out. It's just one of those things. And I just feel like he's just been underutilized and misutilized by Pochettino and Potter before him. So it's a weird one for me. And I do think he's shown a lot given the limited time he's had on the pitch. So it remains to be seen what happens there. I don't know if Poch will take Sterling out of the firing line because I think he's more of a, well, you're grown up. I know you can handle it. So just get out there and play, which is fair enough. Now, if that's how he wants to play it, then that's how he wants to play it. But in terms of Nonny Madueke, again, I think he had a good international break. I think the under-21 level was maybe a bit too easy for him. I think he's played at that level for quite a few years now. So I think he's like maybe a bit over it, but he needs to get some minutes. So I think it's good for him to go to the under-21s and play some games. With Nonny, it's a bit of a funny one. I don't think he's made that much of an impact when he has played. But that being said, as a squad player, it's very difficult for you to make an impact if you're not playing, getting on the pitch consistently or getting on the pitch at all. So, it's a tough one for me. If I was to pick between the two, it'd probably be Mudryk, because I think Mudryk has had a bit more minutes and shown me more with the minutes that he's had. But I think Nonny's a good option. I think he's a good option to have in the squad. I don't really have a problem with him being in the squad. But if I was to pick between the two, it'd be Mudryk. But that's no slight on Madueke. I think Madueke needs a lot of work in his technical ability. Same way with Mudryk. I think Mudryk needs some refinement in his technical ability as well. I think Mudryk is more, I'd say, probably a little bit neater technically, but he's still very slack. Same way with Madueke, I think he's pretty slack in terms of his aerial ball controls and his just general technical quality, if that makes any sense. But I think Madueke's got a great, great profile to be a real goal scorer. I think, yeah, he's got something about him that I think, yeah, he could be a real, real hitter. But he just needs to play, basically. And I don't know if he's going to play enough at Chelsea, which makes the signing all the more a bit interesting, to say the least. But yeah.
But yeah, indeed. And speaking of interesting, we've obviously got a double bill of games in between now and next week in terms of Burnley at home. Is it Burnley at home this Saturday? Yeah, but I believe we play Burnley this Saturday at home. And then on Thursday, we also play against Manchester United at home. Which can almost be said to be a six-pointer. I mean, look at our dismal record against United. We haven't actually won their home or away in the league since 2017. We're currently 8 points behind them, who are currently in sixth. Do you mean to think there's any possibility of us those in the ground between now and the season?
Between us and United?
Yeah, and what do you think it would take?
I don't know. I mean, the last time that they played us, they popped us off the park. And I was told during and before the game that, you know, we're going to smash them. So I don't really... I don't know. I really don't know. It's difficult for me to even answer that. I don't know if we've got it in us to close the gap. I want us to, but I just don't see it, man. I think they've probably got a better manager than us. I think whilst Eve hasn't really covered himself in glory, I think he's covered himself a lot better than Pochettino has, which is, you know, insane. But yeah, I think they've got a better coach. I think the fans are behind them a bit more than our fans are behind us. So I think that might carry a little bit further as well along. And I don't think that it's as toxic over there as it is with us. I think there's a bit more optimism at United because they've got a new owner and all that stuff. Whereas us, it's just toxic, period. And we've still got Pochettino at the helm. So I think, I think we're going to finish below them, unfortunately. I'd be very surprised, and presently surprised, actually, if we do. But I just don't see it, man. I don't see it. But yeah, the run of fixtures, Burnley, United, then we've got Sheffield United away. So, and then Everton after that, before the Man City game. So, those are all winnable fixtures. I mean, if Chelsea are serious, which we all know that they're not, should pick up some wins there. I mean, you expect us to beat Burnley at home. You expect us to get something from United at home. And maybe you get a win at Sheffield United, who have lost 20 games this season. I mean, surely.
If that's insane, 20 losses.
They've lost 20 games. So Chelsea should pick up some points. And you've got Everton, who have lost 3 more games than us. So at home. And we usually beat Everton at home. So it's just, it's hard, man. It's hard. It's so sad that that's where my mind's at, like we should. Like, I don't even have the expectation that we're going to. Like, there's just, we should do, but I don't know. Because that's where Chelsea are. It's mad. It's absolutely insane. But yeah.
Absolutely insane indeed. Meej, Jay, I want to thank you guys for joining me for another Chelsea Hour.
No problem, bro. No problem. Thank you for having me.
And so, listeners, have a great week, and hopefully we come back next week to 6 points. Peace.
Peace.
Hazard. Trying to find a way through. Oh, that is magnificent. Magical from Eden Hazard. Brilliant run by Hazard. Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal. That's more like Kante. They do threads on Twitter and ranting. Doing the most. True say that money is power. So when you get money, keep quiet and ghost. Ghost. I remember when I shot my shot, but I didn't have guap, so I hit the post. But next time it's a golden goal. Sports Social Podcast Network.